Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here for our next to last episode of the Expectations series here, and we'll be talking about Adisa Isaac and Justice Hill, one player on defense, one player on offense. Joining me for that is Pete Gilbert of WBAL. Pete, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Ken. I always enjoy this. It's like a pre-season chat about what may be, and that's kind of fun to wet the whistle as we get ready for 2024.
I certainly enjoy this series like almost no other. It's great to have a cross-section of opinions come in and talk about position groups. We do position group shows, but there's nothing like talking about individual players to talk about roles within the position group to get talking about that, and I think we'll have some of that, particularly with our first guy, Justice Hill. A six-year player, seems like he's been around forever, but he won't turn 27 until November still.
Yeah, he came out of Oklahoma State and, you know, didn't kind of unlauded a little bit. I mean, but then he goes to the combine and runs the fastest 40 of all the running backs, so he shoots up a little bit. And he's shown enough flashes throughout his time in Baltimore to make everyone knows Justice Hill, but he hasn't been a star. And so now we're trying to figure out, well, if he were to be healthy and had a role that mattered significantly all season long, what might a season be? And that's kind of where we've landed right now.
So Hill had fine rate statistics last year, did a lot of things well, 4.6 yards per carry, ran for a career high 387 yards. Obviously, the team really, really missed Keaton Mitchell after they just got a little taste of him, and he had, frankly, the greatest 40-carry season in the history of the National Football League by a lot of different metrics. But Hill had a very good year, and if you even compare Hill to, say, a Henry last year, he had a higher success rate than Henry. Not yards per carry were higher by about 0.4, but his success rate was higher by almost 3%. Some of that probably a function of how Lamar Jackson helps every running back on his team.
No doubt. And that's where, you know, when you think about just what the running back room, considering the quality of the backs, you know, and yet still the threat of Lamar, what that may mean for that running back room to really explode in a way that we haven't maybe seen thus far with Lamar there. Because I definitely, especially I think as you see Lamar smaller, 205 pounds, certainly in watching him out at mini camps, he is a much more slender version than what we saw the last couple of seasons. You know, you would think he doesn't want to take the pounding. He's not going to want to run a lot of fourth and one powers this year. That would be more Derrick Henry's role, or, you know, or could be a Justice Hill, who, despite his size, has had really good success running inside the tackles, which has been, I think, one of the great successes of him as someone who got penciled in as a speedster and just a third down back. But as we saw, you know, go back to 2019 when he had the bulk of the carries against Pittsburgh in that rain game when they were sitting a lot of the starters, how hard he ran up the middle, how hard he was to tackle. And, you know, and you saw kind of like there's more there than just a third down back. And that's where, you know, if he is able to reach the potential of what he could, that he can be more than just that guy that comes in for a spell. For Derrick Henry, he could be a much more prominent player.
Well, he was this last year. He certainly played a lot on third down, as you said, and really had not been a particularly great third down pack prior in his career. Not that he was a terrible pass blocker. He was an okay pass blocker, and he was an okay pass blocker for most of this year until an AFC championship game where he had a mistake or two. But the reason he was on third down, and one of the things he did not do well on third down, is he did not catch the football and make yardage after the catch. He didn't catch the football enough. He didn't have enough yak. And last year, 5.3 yards per target is Still a low bar, but 8.3 yak per reception shows he was being used in a lot more gadgetry and whatnot. I think the Ravens made a better use finding him places where he could make yardage in space with Monken than they had previously.
Yeah, and it will certainly be interesting to see how they choose to use him now, given that, I mean, as again, you mentioned Keaton Mitchell and the greatest 40 carry season ever. He may be back as far as practicing, and I'm sure he's going to start on PUP. He may even come back, you know, mid-season. I would not count on Keaton Mitchell being the Keaton Mitchell we saw until 2025. I don't think it's realistic. The people I've talked to who would be in the know don't think that's realistic either. Therefore, Justice Hill's role, I think, is absolutely critical this season for him to, if he needs to be good to, you know, and really be at the level of where, he, you know, the top, you know, if he can reach that 80%, 75-80% of his capabilities, then that can be pretty special. If he's not, if he's turning the ball over, if he's not catching the ball and making guys miss on third and four, you know, or if he's not picking guys up in a, you know, on a blitz, those kind, if he doesn't do that well, that's going to be a problem. But they have chosen to re-sign him. They see in him the things they want out of that role, which I think is really telling and important, because it emboldens Justice to believe in himself. They because he knows they believe in him, and that is so impactful and meaningful for a player to when they know the staff believes in you. Then you, even if you screw up, you're, it's like, okay, I can allow for that. I can breathe. When you're not sure and you get that one opportunity and you don't make the most of it, and then you're like, oh God, I'm going to be on the bench for the rest of the game or season even. So the Ravens believe in Justice Hill. They believe in a significant role for him. And I think that really can allow him to be at his best.
Now, you know, one of the interesting things about Hill is that I do not believe his contract is guaranteed at this point. I actually have to look at that to make sure, but I believe he can still be cut for about $2.5 million of savings. Don't think the Ravens will do it, but it is it would still be a possibility. He's valuable to them in other ways, like special teams and whatnot. He had additional value this last year because he was really the best pass blocker they had, and they needed him on third down to provide a little bit of juice in the passing game too. But they had other options this year. Ali is not a good pass blocker, but Derrick Henry is one of the best in the NFL. And you could keep him on the field on third down. He's also got a fair amount of history as a receiver, a guy they've tried to get up, get out into space and do some things. I love the idea of Derrick Henry being a block and release on an extended play. Player. So he'd have a set blocking role on the play, as I would call it, meaning set or chip block for an eligible receiver. He'd be assigned to block, but he would have a late release opportunity on an extended play. I think he could be very deadly in that sort of spot.
Sure. You get Derrick Henry in space. I mean, that's the world is his oyster. There's no doubt about that. He is certainly special, but you know, the idea of keeping Henry on for third downs, for extended drives. So he's 30 years old. Mm-hmm. And the reality, he's a freak. He doesn't look like a 30-year-old. He physically has not thus far acted like one. But everything we know about running backs in the modern NFL at 30 is that they aren't getting better. They aren't getting stronger. They aren't even maintaining what we'd seen at 29. So the idea that you would, you know, go into a season saying we're going to have Derek have this larger role, really, you know, he's going to be on the field for what, 80% of the offensive snaps, I think that's not a great path forward. Therefore, again, you need someone who is there to be there more realistically for, you know, 30 to 35% that you feel good about. And that's where, again, I believe that they believe in Justice Hill. And it's up to him to prove that belief correct.
I would completely agree, by the way, that they're going to limit the workload of Derrick Henry, that they will work to do that. They've had some difficulty doing it, in particular with some defensive players in the past. People who were too good to take off the field, yet the Ravens knew damn well they weren't good for a big high snap count. Pernell McPhee a few years ago was a guy who was their best pass and run defender at the same time, and they just can't figure out how to get him off the field. Jadeveon Clowney, even last year, they did a pretty good job of rotating their big three, but they wanted Clowney on the field for the lion's share of those snaps. With Henry, I think there's an opportunity because there's a line of BS that has been going around for Derrick Henry for his entire career, basically, that is that he gets stronger as the game goes on. I believe it's bull. I believe the truth of the matter is defenses get weaker as the game along gets along, and Henry doesn't go down by very much. And so I think the advantage you can have with a limited workload is play him less on first and second down. If third down is where you need him, put him in on third down. If that means he's a receiver a little more and a pass blocker, that should be fine. Play him, 60% as many first and second downs where you have Ali, who his only path on the field is on first or second down. You don't want him on the field on third down. And Hill maybe is a better suited to Henry than play one of the first two downs as well. So I hope Malkin will be non-traditional in his thinking about Henry, and Henry isn't out there for every first and second where the chance of the Ravens running the ball is higher. But then there will, of course, be all sorts of desire to create that gravitational pull of a Lamar and Henry mesh point that will create all sorts of play action opportunities. And Monken is just going to go crazy loving that. So I think my guess is they're going to have trouble getting Derrick Henry off the field, period.
They will, assuming the health and assuming, I think that's a great point. He's not going to get stronger, but he just doesn't get wear as hard as everyone else during an NFL game. You watch the workouts to know that he is a special alien. Mm-hmm. There are just very few human beings that had the physical gifts and then the work ethic to take advantage of them the way that Derrick Henry has done. And that's special. But it's interesting to you. That's a great point about make sure he's on the field on third down if that's a down that matters. And what's interesting, you think about the Ravens, the way they have talked a lot with the Orioles and the Orioles and their analytics. And, the idea that, if it's a high leverage situation, give me your best high leverage reliever in the seventh inning, maybe, or a different, you don't have to follow the script, seventh inning, eighth inning, ninth inning. If it's the sixth inning and it's a really big moment in a game and you need a guy, bring in a guy. Maybe you still may save your closer. But other than that, if it's Yennier, Cano is theoretically your eighth inning guy. Well, bring him in the sixth if you need him in the sixth.
Sure.
And so I know they had these conversations about, about breaking outside the mold of what tradition dictates. And, how do you win a game? That's what it comes down to. What's the best way to do that? And I will give the Ravens credit for trying to find different outlooks and different approaches to making sure they can be the team that wins that game.
Let's pull it back here to Justice Hill. Now we've gone kind of far afield here. In terms of what he has provided for the offense, primarily when he's on the field on a passing down, he's been a blocker. His yards per route run, even that's when he's not a set blocker, he's actually running a pattern to get in the denominator of this one, are only 0.91 yards per route run, which is, if you think about it, you got five eligible receivers. You probably want to get about 8.0 yards per pass play. You could maybe deal with a little bit less than that, but let's say you got the MVP of the league. You want to get 8.0 yards per pass play. Then you got to get 1.6 on average from each. So to the fact that if Hill is 0.7 under that average, they got to get that from somebody else. And even though there are certainly our wide receivers who run deeper routes, that's difficult to do. So they need to They probably need someone who either provides better pass blocking or more as a receiver on third down. I think Derrick Henry could be that guy, but whether or not he's used that way.
Yeah, and we've seen enough of Justice Hill on a wheel route that he can get open on that mm-hmm. play. He's done it pretty consistently. When called upon, the connection with Lamar hasn't always been there. What you'd like, what I think could maybe provide some more success is the angle route out of the backfield to, because he's going to shake a linebacker at that point, and he has the quickness to do so. Give that little nod, that head nod outside, and then cut him in the middle there, where then you've got the whole field in front of you. And I like that possibility and potential for him. where he might, that's an area in which I think that he can improve. But yeah, you want to find ways to get him in space a little bit better. He's proven he can catch the ball when he doesn't drop passes. The fumble, it does feel like, I mean, the moments have been larger. He hasn't fumbled a lot, but it feels like when it's happened, it's the impact of the fumble has been more significant. And again, that also may just go down to the fact, how many opportunities do you really get? And if you don't get a ton, and even if you don't fumble a lot, every fumble is going to be magnified just through the sheer numbers, the way the numbers work out. So the potential is there. I think Justice Hill is somebody on whom they can rely, who has the confidence in himself. He's still incredibly fast. You know, he may not run a 4.43 that he ran at the combine, but he is still an elite speed guy out of the backfield. There aren't many running backs who are going to be faster than him. And that's true. And that's meaningful. And so it's a matter of like, all right, stepping back, which I know throughout the offseason, they've done a big idea. Like, okay, we know what we can do well offensively, but we really need to find different ways to add on to that. And he is a guy who has maybe been underutilized in terms of, he has some elite, you know, numbers. He has some elite capabilities. How do we best use them? And that's will be really interesting to see how that works. And it also goes down to a relationship with John Harbaugh, which I know he enjoys a very good one because of his willingness to do special teams and to put forward that special teams are as important to him as catching a pass on third down. And if there's only one way to endear yourself to John Harbaugh, it's to show that belief. I think that's a big reason why they've gone ahead and kept him around and said, you know, while the production hasn't been spectacular, they know they can rely on him in that regard, and they believe in that. And maybe he even – say Deonte Hardy doesn't work out as the receiver on kick returns. I think they would like to see Justice Hill in that role. Is it someone in the new kick return rules can be – could be interesting. You want someone that's going to be able to make a quick move, shed a tackler because they're going to be right there, but then there's space beyond it. And then he's got the speed to make that meaningful.
Yeah. There are the Ravens have a couple of backup guys who might be reasonable in that role, but Deonte Hardy is clearly going to get the first shot at it. I agree with you completely about Hill's special teams being important. You know, special teams has four core units. They're the kickoff and punt coverage and return units, and Hill is on all four. And Hill's on as a gunner on the punt return team most typically. There are not that many players who are not linebackers who are on all four teams like that. Malik Harrison's actually on five because he's on the kick block team as well. But there are very few players who have the kind of special teams role that Hill has, and it's quite valuable. The Ravens have done a great job of collecting players who can give them something on their primary side of the ball, be that offense or defense, and then give you a lot on special teams. Malik Harrison is ideal, you know, early down Sam linebacker, plus, you know, maybe a backup Mike linebacker if something were to happen to Roquan. But he also gives you all that special teams ability. And you know, Levine and McClellan and all the names from the past that they've had who've been great special teamers have been able to have long careers with the team because of it. I think this is kind of a crossroads year for Justice Hill. Would you agree, along with some of the other big names on the team? This is the last year of his contract. And then you have, you know, huge crossroads years from Stanley, probably from Mark Andrews, I'm thinking, because they have to make a decision about Likely. He carries a big salary next year, coming back from injury. All that is a crossroads point for me. I certainly hope it works out. In his case, Stanley, we really don't know. And then the third one is Humphrey, you know, coming back from an injury and getting to the very expensive part of his contract. This is an important year.
It is, and for Hill, you know, because the reality is, you can like a guy as much as you want. And Levine really broke the mold in that, and partly because he was willing to take as little money as he really got, even as you know throughout it, how long he played in the NFL. But Justice Hill, the fact of the matter is, there are going to be cheaper guys for that role. So you really have to prove yourself, you know, above and beyond that. I mean, would I be surprised if he's here next year? Yes, absolutely. Just for the reality, you're going to get a third contract For this level of role, probably not. When you just have guys coming into the league, given the, how cheap it is to get running back, you can get really quality running backs in the sixth, seventh, or undrafted. Hello, Keaton Mitchell. And he knows that too. So he has to be special. He has to prove that he is worthy of a third contract. That even if it's not, you know, monster money, is still not, you know, in rookie minimum. So he needs to prove that. And when you have that level of motivation, you given health, you expect the best out of him.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see what he can do this season. But tell me in your terms, what would be a good season for Justice Hill? I actually had a lot of trouble defining this, by the way.
Well, it is. But when you have a player who, you know, whose role isn't defined by stats necessarily, you know, in terms of bulk, you know, it's about big plays. So maybe how many big plays can he provide in a season, right? What would be a good number? Would there be, if he could make four memorable offensive plays, when you look back in a season and say those were four critical plays, that would be good. If he could make six, that would be great. And so whether those are maybe breaking out a 40-yard run on a third, you know, on a third and five that flips a field, or is that a touchdown on a wheel route catch, you know, late in the game? If he could make four of those, I think that would be good. If he makes six, I think that would be great. And because your yards for 300, four, whatever they are, for you don't know how many attempts he's going to get or whatever. But what kind of impact can someone in that reserve role make? You know, if you can look back on the season and say, yeah, I remember that. And it also might be, hey, he chased a guy down and caused a fumble because he's on special teams. Mm-hmm. He could make one of those kinds of plays as well, and that could be included in the four or six that to go back and be truly impactful. So I think that's maybe a way I would look at Justice Hill. I don't remember his number. I mean, I know he has five total touchdowns for his career. I know he had three last year. Is it 1.8 touchdowns? I don't know. Am I going to remember four to six plays out of him? That's how I would look at a good and great, you know, look at Justice Hill for this upcoming season.
Okay. I think that's a perfectly reasonable way to define. I'll remind people 60th and 80th percentiles what I use. So for a good season, I said remains a plus core special teams player, finds a role that complements Derrick Henry with plus stats on a rate basis. I honestly don't know whether he's going to be primarily a pass blocker anymore. He's primarily an early down back. So I'll just say plus stats on a rate basis and remains a plus pass blocker overall. Wherever he's playing, I want that to be a thing. And that's it. I have absolutely no requirements for a number of big plays or yards or anything. Big play is a good way to define it, by the way. But yards is I or receptions or yards per target or anything. That's my whole good season right there.
Yeah, when you think about, you know, I've kind of baked in as a given that he's going to be good on special teams. And maybe I probably should have laid that out a little better. I just assume that. So I baked that into his cake. And sure. So when I'm thinking going forward there, you know, how would I define, you know, the way I can characterize that would be in the big plays. But I assume he's going to be continue to be a good core special teamer because, again, he's still young enough. There's no reason he wouldn't be. He's only going to get better at those things if you can assume good health. Mm-hmm.
All right, so a great season. We're going six big plays is what you're going with? Because
that's what I'm going with.
Great. Yep. Okay, so for a great season, I'd say Monken emphasizes his speed in new offensive scheme as a receiver, and he takes his pass blocking up a notch so he can stay on the field on third down. So he doesn't have to be replaced by Henry. Actually, would take some burden off Henry if he could be there. He's also a very viable outlet guy. If you find it there, he's probably not as good as Henry, but he'd be a viable output guy. And he's also on the field as part of pony schemes. Now, the Ravens have a couple options to do that with Ali and Hill, but I would love to see them use a little more pony. And I know there's a lot of total constraints in terms of there's only five eligible receivers per play because there's five linemen, there's one quarterback, there's 11 players. You get five eligible receivers each play, and everybody is going to be upset about the low number of snaps they're getting this year is my prediction. All the tight ends, all the wide receivers, and probably every running back except for Henry. And Henry might be upset, depending on how many carries he gets. So the problem the Baltimore Orioles have right now in the outfield with nobody's happy with their playing time, that's going to be the Ravens at the skill positions if things go well for the Ravens this year. You know, that nobody feels like.
I think that's a great point. When you look around, again, this is probably, you know, the most talented wide receiver core Lamar has had. I mean, OBJ, if you had taken OBJ a couple of years ago, I would have maybe changed that. But yeah, particularly given what we saw last year, he was good, not great. Mm-hmm. But when you think about what he has on the outside, and then he's got two tight ends. I watched Mark at OT. He looks great. He looks like he's come back fully from the injury from a year ago. So you got two exceptional tight ends and a monster at running back and good guys well along with him. So yeah, sharing the ball will be a challenge. And that's where great coaching and scheme and culture really, really matter.
I got just a little bit more on a great season here. I expect, no matter what, by the way, I expect a decrease in rushing yards and overall yards from Hill this year. I think it's pretty much unavoidable given another young running back, given that Henry's, you know, obviously going to be taking more carries. And that's obviously, you know, Henry's health is in question there. But probably the most important thing that would be the signal that he had a great season is that the Ravens keep him as a primary option for 2025, whether or not they actually sign him, that he's one of the people they're really discussing is we got to find a way to, you know, bring back justice. He, you know, if we lose him, think about what our special team is going to be. We have that problem to solve if you want to do that. And we've got a, you know, we've got a guy who's helped. If the Ravens are going through that discussion at the end of 2024, keeping it in mind for 25, then I think that means Hill had a great year.
No doubt about it. And because if he is able to put up the kind of year where you're like, I don't think I want to put a rookie there. I don't care. I just want him. I want, and that's what John has done with guys in the past for, you know, where maybe, you know, you even were kind of surprised about it. And it's funny. I think it was the way Zach Orrid, you know, gone up throughout his career on the field, if not for the neck injury, that was a guy who was of that vein early on and where he's like, I won't care. I got to find a way. I'm going to give him every opportunity because I see the world in him. You're right. That would be a great way to describe a good year for Hill. Just because, again, the numbers aren't, they can't be great because if the numbers are great, the Ravens had a terrible season.
Right.
Right. If he's got 700 yards rushing, something went terrible. Right. It was a disaster.
I can literally hardly think of a worse thing than Justice Hill right. 700 yards rushing.
That would be awful. So yeah, it's much more about, you know, big picture, like just the impact that he was able to make in terms of just being so reliable, and then also was able to provide some big sparks.
All right, let's move on. Talk about Adisa Isaac a little bit. 6'4", 247, 33 7/8-inch arm. Very important for an edge rusher, obviously. Will be 23 in October. So he's right in the middle range of the edge rushers coming out. There's certainly some older guys and there are some younger guys as well. But he is out of that Penn State mold, another great physical specimen.
He is a marvel to look at physically. Not quite a Dafe Owe measurable wise, certainly not in the overall speed, but you know, in what he put up for the body that he has was certainly elite. And the production was, you know, I mean, 7.5 sacks, you know, compared to what it Owe have, what, none?
Zero
his final year at Penn State. And so, again, I'm more of a pressure guy. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, sacks are great, but if you're pressuring and you're forcing the offense to screw up, you did your job. And I think Owe was good at that and has been in the NFL. But I mean, when you are able to get to the quarterback the way that Adisa Isaac was at Penn State, it's truly promising, you know. But he doesn't, he's not elite burst, maybe not elite overall top end athleticism. But when you factor in, and I think in football, it's as critical as in any sport, the way that he is with his teammates, the character of his makeup is so critical. I mean, when he forces people to believe in him and they know that he believes in them, one, you know, it's the sum is greater than the parts, right? And that's what he is. That's what makes him so special. The way he has fought through an incredibly challenging childhood, young adulthood, with some family circumstances and having to help raise, some disabled brothers and sisters. And a single mom in Brooklyn, holy cow, to get where he is, go ahead, count him out.
Didn't you know it's possible
to get THC shipped right to your door. Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Dare you, because he is that level of, you know, he's that level of person, and he has the physical tools to go along with that, if not uber elite, which is why he wasn't first round, but certainly very, very good, and the capacity to get better. And he's going to be in a group where, you know, working with Chuck Smith, who we, you know, we saw how impactful he was a year ago with guys getting to the quarterback, and he's comfortable, you know, with that room. He fits right in so well with it. You know, I'm excited to see. What has been disappointing is that he got injured at the very beginning of OTAs, and we haven't seen him, you know, what he's looked like out on the field with his Ravens teammates to this point. And so training camp will be really key for him to come back. Like, no, I'm good. I'm ready to roll and ready to learn and then be able to find a role, you know, early on with this OLB group.
That's really important. And we talk about this almost every episode that involves the corners of the wide receivers. Those guys need to stay healthy for the preseason for the live fire. And they are the biggest soft tissue injury risks of all, that are the most likely injuries that come almost like plagues through camp in terms of the number of hamstring injuries that occur and other little minor tweaks that aren't going to keep them off the first game necessarily, but they keep you from seeing what the guy can do. And particularly the guys at backup, that's really tough. He's joining a very crowded OLB group. It's crowded by number of people, not necessarily by talent. You've got Van Noy, you've got Owe, you've got Ajabo, and you've got Isaac, who I think will all split the pass rushing snaps. Tavius Robinson and Malik Harrison have been an early down base defense outside linebacker pairing where Harrison does a very good job adapting to the Sam role. We talked about that on the Harrison episode. Won't do it again here. Tavius Robinson, who I expected to be a situational pass rusher as a rookie, it's not the way it worked out at all. He was an early down run defender.
Tavius really grew. When you see him in person, you can kind of see why he is physically imposing. So, and he was willing to be that guy too. He wasn't hung up on being, no. I'm about moves on the outside, beating a tackle to go get the quarterback. He was, you know, had the absolute right attitude about, you mean stick my nose in there on, right? Sure. I'll go ahead and do that. Happy to. And that's, you know, what that kind of attitude is key. I think it was a really key point that you made though. Like, there's a lot of guys there who you're looking at like, okay, but it's not a special, you're not looking at guys that are, you know, overall, like, well, there's an all-pro, there's an all-pro. No, that's not the situation here at all. Van Noy is late in his career. Mm-hmm. You know, Ojabo at this point, I mean, you certainly can't count on him. You're curious, but he just hasn't shown the ability to be healthy at all. And that's so critical. So, and he just hasn't had the reps that he needs. And that's why I want to see Isaac find a way to stay healthy throughout training camp to get the reps. Cause you can't replace them. You can't. And once you get into the season, you can't practice them in a meaningful way. You can in training camp. And he has to be on the field for that. And if you miss the OTAs and aren't on the field totally in training camp, the idea that you're going to be impactful as a rookie is just negligible at best.
Yeah, I think it's a great point, by the way. And if you look at some of the Ravens' careers recently, who've basically been ruined by not being able to get on the field, I mean, if you want to go back a few years, Dan Cody was a guy who I had really high hopes for and was a great player in his 15 career snaps. Okay, really was. He had just a fantastic game against the Falcons, and then one other snap against the Steelers, and that was it. It was a sad thing. He was injured all the time, but Ojabo, you know, obviously missing not being available for the first year. That's on the Ravens for not NFIing him for the whole year. But having him missing the second year, well, you know, it's unfortunate, but it now is greatly reduced his value. And you come to a point this year where he's in direct competition with Isaac for situational pass rush snaps. The Ravens are highly incented to have Isaac be the one that works out in 2024 because of the remaining sand in the hourglass. Now, you could say, oh, we can get a comp pick for both of them. It doesn't generally work out that way. You want to know that Isaac is a ball player this year. And those guys, not only are they fighting for situational pass rush snaps, they're fighting for game day activations. You're not going to activate all six guys.
No. For Ojabo, I mean, at this point, unless he totally breaks out, you just assume it didn't work out. You know, you don't want to, you know, hedging and maybe if, you know, we're working on the longer contract for him. He's just, it's almost a sense of if he's not great, you know, or the first half of this season, you're kind of like, all right, let's make sure the other guys are there to go ahead and get those reps and see what we can find out there. Because it was surprising that he came back when he did, coming off the injury that he had suffered
in 22.
In 22. Because it was illogical because you could clearly see even when he was never himself, never the guy that we saw at Michigan, you know, teamed with Aiden Hutchinson there. What an amazing duo they were, but I haven't seen anything like that. And the injury that followed that has followed him all the way through and that's where, you know, we're going to quick tangent, you know, with Voorhees, everybody penciling him in at right guard. That's why they didn't draft a guard. They've got their guy. Cause he was there. I'm like, I hope so, but he was unavailable for a full year, and you've already lost that year, and I understand why you go ahead and do that value for him, but
they didn't lose the year though. That's really important. The NFI year doesn't count against his 4 years, so he's still with the Ravens for four more years. So it's a huge difference from Ojabo. Yeah.
Thank you for that. You learn something every day, and I appreciate that. Thank you, Ken.
Yeah. Voorhees is replacing a guy too who was not particularly good. So as much as they've had all kinds of nice things to say about Simpson as he walks out the door, but they couldn't fix his penalty problem, and that was just enormous in terms of his value.
He had some great moments, and he had some very good games, but consistently was not an above average starter. He wasn't an average starter. They're hopefully we'll be better served with Andrew Voorhees, but he did. The year may not count towards his contract, but he was gone for the year. So yep. we don't know what he is yet going to be. And you hope that he is coming in and he's fine. He's really good. And an offensive lineman where explosivity is not what you need. It's the same as outside linebacker. There's a much greater chance, I think, for it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to be quite as twitchy as a David Ojabo. But, you know, back to Isaac on that, you know, just, the injury, fortunately, he's dealing with, it's minor stuff. And he played a lot at Penn State. And he's he was productive and he was available. And I think that's really exciting about, assuming you can expect that from him going forward.
Yeah, a few things to look for Isaac in this preseason. I'll just go back to my draft notes on the guy, or actually my scouting notes on the guy, was I think he turns the shoulder of the tackle very effectively and turns to set the edge in the run game in particular. So I think you see somebody who could do that. He's not really a guy who stands up to one-on-one power blocks from the tackle or pull blocks from a guard, but I don't know how many 250 to even 270 pound outside linebackers can stand up to your typical 320 pound guard, typically who's pulling. Just there's not that many who can really do that. And usually when it's a Suggs or somebody like that, it's a lot of technique that goes with that. But in Isaac's case, I think he could be a guy who's okay against the run. He is a guy who has to win with his length and his hands, as opposed to his size. Did that very well at Penn State. He's got a faster get off, and you will notice it, I think, right away, unless Owe is improved. He's got a faster get off than Owe, even though he doesn't have the probably the twitchiness or the twitchiness is not the right word, because that really maps to get off a little bit, but he really doesn't have the spin move or the power or the speed of an Owe, but he's unbelievable quick get off. So that ought to be one of the really exciting things to see in camp.
Yeah. And when it comes down to, you know, being as an edge guy, being good against the run, I talked with Jared Johnson had a great conversation I'm doing a TV show with him. We had 10 minutes in between segments. And I'm like, what is it about setting the edge? Why, what are the keys to doing that? And he's like, you have to want to do it. You really have to want to. He's like, beyond that, I mean, there are some technical things, sure. But he's like, he said, Pete, I can't tell you how many guys don't really want to do it. And so I go back to what we know about Adisa Isaac and a level of want to that is there, the nature of him, his ability and willingness to fight through whatever adversity has come his way. If that's the adversity the coaches say is going to be his, he's going to stand up to it. And then he can, and he's very smart guy. Whatever the technique is, he can learn that. So I think that's a promising, when you think about areas in which someone like him would be able to improve, that would be one of them based on who he is, as much as maybe just, well, he didn't, you know, are his arms long enough or that, whatever, maybe physical, technical thing. The want to is so critical for that. And he's got that built into him.
Much in the same way that the Ravens have been able to teach even very mediocre athletes to be able to pull from left guard, James Hurst, Bradley Bozeman, just very average athletes.
God bless Bradley Bozeman. Oh, yeah. Amazing. But got paid. That was amazing.
Yeah. But the good news, the same can be said about setting the edge at the NFL level. And I think it does relate to want to. I don't think Tim Williams ever wanted to. They weren't going to put him in that role anyway. I honestly question David Ajabo's commitment to it after I saw him in preseason last year. And, you know, if Ajabo or anybody who knows him is listening to this and tells him about it, that's okay. Take it as a challenge. You know, show us the truth. And, you know, we I'd love to see it. And I promise to write fairly about it when the time comes. But the Ravens are marvelous at teaching edge setting. They had the best run defender of his generation in Terrell Suggs. They had another great one in Jarrett Johnson. And he's not the only ones they've had. You know, you go back to Rob Burnett and Michael McCrary is not as great, but still pretty good. And a lot, just a number of great players over the years they've had at doing exactly that role. It won't be because they didn't try and teach it to him right if Adisa Isaac can't learn to play the run successfully in the NFL. It's a matter of he either can't do it or he won't do it. But it's not, if he tries, I think that there's going to be every chance that it succeeds.
No doubt about it. I mean, even Jadeveon Clowney, who was not known for that. We saw his ability to do so a year ago. And that was the one part of the want to from him was he wanted to get a bigger contract. And so he was going to do everything in his power to do that. He was going to get the sacks and he was going to show he could be a guy that you could have at there for all three downs, cause I'll take care of the run as well. And so that was, but that the history suggests that will be, if he wants to, and we believe he will, I certainly do, that will be fine here. You know, the question is, will he be able to get to the quarterback? And will he get enough reps to learn if we can get enough, if we know that he will be able to get to the quarterback? And that will be really interesting to watch throughout the preseason. And because he's a guy you would expect we will see in preseason games. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be one of the protected ones. You know, we'll get an idea out there what he may look like. And they don't have the joint practices that we saw a year ago. You know, too many fights with Washington. Apparently, they didn't want to do that again. And so those preseason games are going to be really critical for him to show that he is deserving of an opportunity once they're figuring out who's going to dress.
Yeah, and enormously important. Absolutely. I want to say another situational advantage. You talk about stopping the run being important. The other thing the Ravens could really use is an outside linebacker who can drop the coverage a little bit. Now, he doesn't have really obvious Sam characteristics. Ran a 4.74 40, which, by the way, is not bad at all for a edge player, but is not great either. It's not a Dafeowe, obviously. But a Dafeowe is a pure rush linebacker, and I don't think the Ravens want to move him off that spot. I think that the goal is to get Adafeowe in a position where he's one-on-one against a tackle and can make a move, get that tackle to overreact, and hopefully Chuck Smith can work his magic and make all of that flow, the timing get better in terms of how he counters against tackles. But getting back to Isaac, 11.7% of the time he dropped, had very solid coverage results in his final year, 6.5 yards per target. The one thing that wasn't so great is he only had one batted pass in his entire college career in a five-year period. Now, when I see that, you know, he's got good length, so I don't think that's really the issue. And you know, most players, they know when to get up. When you're on the edge like that, you often also have a chance to knock down some screen passes if you recognize. And that may be a weakness in his game. So he could really help himself if he can play opposite the tight end on the strong side. And the Ravens, they really de-emphasized any sort of Sam play last year. The only guy who did it a lot was Harrison on early downs. But I think it could come back again as a way to fuel the pass rush if they don't get quite as much pressure from the edges themselves. They drop a guy to cover. They send a guy off the slot. They send a guy from linebacker, whatever. It's a tried and true method that has worked for the Ravens for many years. So he can help himself, I think, a lot if he picks that up.
I mean, I even go back to Courtney Upshaw dropping and you know, from inside and running back. The it's part of the Ravens' trademark DNA is to have different guys dropping, you know, in front, you know, when you least expect it. And that's will be very interesting to see with Zach Orr, how he approaches that. And again, this is what he's known. So you expect to see what that level of, we're going to try and surprise you and confuse you as much as possible. I thought Mike McDonald was brilliant with it. I felt that he had offenses so often absolutely unknowing who was coming, who was not. And that's when you can have them guessing, you lose a half step, and that half step is the biggest difference in the world in football. So that I hope that Zach Orr, and I would assume he will, because it's all he's known as being a Baltimore Raven, really very brief stint down, you know, with Miami, but coming back, I think that he can, this is what he knows. This is DNA. So he knows how important it is to have to fool guys. So having Adisa Isaac be able to drop will be critical. And again, that will be a way for him to show whether or not he is worthy of being on the field. And, you know, and that's when you're the rookie, you want to be as multiple as possible. As I tell all the interns that we had coming through WBAL, I'm like, you got to be a good writer. You got to be able to be on camera. You got to be able to ad lib on camera. You need to be able to edit video. You need all these different things that when I was coming up, there was less of it. So you've got to be a lot. You got to do a lot. You got to do a lot.
Let me ask you this specifically. Specifically, it relates to an intern editing video. When I interned at Channel 2 in 1985, it was a union shop, and we were not allowed to touch the video editing machines. I don't know if that's changed over the years.
It has not. For when it comes to video that is going on air, but there's so much web stuff now.
Gotcha.
Whereas, and certainly generally, as if you're starting out, you will be in a market that is not a union market, right, and you will be having to do some of everything.
Right.
And so you better understand the web. You better understand social media, how best to, you know, drive figures towards not just what you're doing online, you know, during on your Twitter or Facebook or, you know, Snapchat or whatever it may be, to move that to watch them, to get them to watch the show on still linear TV, which we hope will last long enough for me to retire. And we're efforting that at this point. And but yeah, be multiple. And that's why I'm looking forward to the AI training I'll be having at the end of this month to learn how best to use it towards my advantage and to not have it replace me.
I was trying to think of a joke, two words there that would go with AI, but I just couldn't do it in the amount of time you left me in that sentence. That's unfortunate. But yeah, that's good advice, by the way, for any profession, Pete, is if you can bring your skills to a profession where they aren't, that is tremendously valuable. If you're a math guy taking risk to the markets in the 1970s, it was something that wasn't there, and you know, there were this great opportunity and growth to build your own pyramid of people that'll work for you in those cases. So I completely agree. Anyway, I think it's great advice. But let's go back to Isaac for a second. What would make a good season for Adisa Isaac from your perspective?
I think a good season for Isaac is to be a core special teamer, to get on the field that way and be a consistent, reliable contributor on special teams. And then to get, 15 to 20 snaps, in defensive action in the game, I think that would be good. And if he's able to do it, you say, okay, you're trending upwards. Is it two sacks? Is it 10 quarterback hits? I don't know, but I think be on the field as a special teamer and then prove that you've earned 15 snaps, during a game. I think that would be a good year.
Yeah, that's the Tavius Robinson way pretty much from last year. Tavius played, he was not a four units, special teams player, but he played some special teams and he was on the field for almost 30% of the snaps as a defender, which really kind of snuck up on me. I knew he played a lot in the early season, but that he played that much was actually kind of surprising. To me, a good season for Isaac, active for at least 12 games. If that's the case, what that will mean is he beats out either Robinson or Ajabo for a significant pass rushing role, because otherwise I don't think they'd have him on the active game day roster. And his development curve is not as long as it has been for some of the past outside linebackers. Ajabo is one. I'll go to another who ended up being fine is Paul Kruger. You just want to find out quicker than they did that you have Paul Kruger, and then you can make more use of him, hopefully, in that amount of time. But Paul Kruger had a hard time getting game day activations because he wasn't a special teamer, and that really restricted what they could do. And then they're bringing on a fifth outside linebacker. They didn't want to do it in those days. Now they pretty much have been going with five, but they're not going to have six active, and they might not have six on the roster even, which might mean somebody could get traded at the end of camp if that's the case. Wanted to play a significant role in special team, flashes pressure as a rookie. I have no requirement for a gaudy sack total or quarterback hit of any sort, but I just want to see him flash as a pass rusher in some way that makes it clear that he's earned those snaps on the field, or at least he's trending towards earning those snaps on the field.
When you're on the field, you want the offensive coordinator to have to recognize that you're on the field.
Yeah.
Right. That's a great, if they don't care that, you're whatever. Rook, not concerned. Literally not part of my thought for this play at all. Then that's a problem. You mentioned Kruger. It wasn't until 2012, his last year, when all of a sudden he flashed. And it's really the beauty of the position is that if you do, all of a sudden, if it clicks for you, next thing you know, you got paid.
Yep.
And that's we've seen that so many times.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, I mean that's the beauty of that position is you have the opportunity to become a star very quickly, and a great season. Then when I think about it, well, that would be five sacks, getting on there and really be announcing yourself as I'm going to be a starter, because I do think he has the capability. I think he has the physical tools and the internal makeup to be that guy. And if it happens that quickly, that would probably become from the fact there was an injury somewhere that presented that opportunity. He's not just going to, take Adafi Owe's job. That's not going to happen. But if an injury happens and he stays healthy, he could take advantage of that. I think he has that capability to do so.
Said very similar things for a great season. Snap count of 25% plus, becomes one of the top three rotational pass rushers. So somebody is out, somebody, it could be because of injury. It could be of ineffectiveness. I don't think it's going to be ineffectiveness in the case of Owe. He's too good, but it could be ineffectiveness with age for Van Noy, possibly. I think he'll be fine. I think the big risk for ineffectiveness is Ojabo. And then the thing is wide open. Tavius Robinson may have something to say about it, but it'll be between him and Isaac for that third role, as we saw last year. Or keeps him rested by using others on run downs, and the strategy pays off with solid pressure numbers across the board that include what I like to see is a sack number that is in line with the base of the pyramid, which is pressures and the middle quarterback hits. So if he gets four sacks there, but it could be three, that might be fine too. And a wide base of pressures to go with that, because he's playing mostly as a situational pass rusher. That's a normal pyramid. The Ravens had some abnormal pyramids this last year, very narrow pyramid from Justin Madubuike, whose pressure total does not support his sack total from the inside. So it makes you wonder just how much did he benefit as a closer and whatnot. And, you know, we need Justin Madubuike to be very good. But we also, that means probably we need him to be a finisher and some other people to start plays. And we probably, in all truth, are just going to have to accept a significantly lower sack total from Madubuike, whether that's 7, 8, or 9 being, you know, a perfectly good year and as much or more pressure from him in total, because I think the Ravens overall sack numbers are going to go down. Anyway, initial pressure also by Isaac creates opportunity for internal defenders. Getting back to the Madubuike point.
Yeah, with Madubuike, I mean, that was an outlier. God bless him. Congrats for those numbers, because it really, you know, created the contract that he had. But he's not just was it almost fluky in those numbers that he got. Now the attention that will be born on him because of those numbers is going to be so much greater. It's just, you know, all offseason, when you look at the AFC North, everyone's thinking, you know, all those three teams are going to play him twice. They're thinking about how, you know, they need to make sure he doesn't do, because he can be an absolute wrecker. But he hadn't been to that point. And as you said, the pyramid was straight up and down. So that the reality is that should, though, create some opportunities on the outside, and where you could see then those numbers if the defense remains as high quality around as we saw a year ago. It will be hard to match it, because that was a great defense from 2023, a truly great defense. But if you can be close to that, that should suggest then there will be great opportunities for, you know, I definitely look at, you know, if Isaac is presented that because of an injury, he could be one to reap that benefit. And then all of a sudden you're looking up and you get the Sunday Night Football later in the year. And that's who Mike Tirico and Chris Collins were talking about in their open. Right, that could happen, and it would be because he has he I think if he gets his opportunity, you know, what is it, you know, luck is preparation and opportunity. If that luck it comes, I think he will have those to take advantage of it.
Yeah. All right. Always a pleasure to talk football with you, Pete. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online and you know, see your material.
So yeah, still on X. Twitter, old guy, I'm going to call it Twitter forever, at WBAL Pete. So please engage me there. Certainly on game days, I'm quite active there throughout. And please make sure to catch Ravens wrap up late Sunday nights, or you can DVR it if you need to on WBAL TV. Keith Mills is back with me again for this year. Really excited about that. It's the only local late night show that is devoted to the Ravens that still doesn't have an off time. We go until we're done. And it's the thing that I enjoy most in my job, without question. And so we put a lot into it, and we just devote so much to breaking down what happened that day. And again, if you got a DVR, because it is late, it's the Sunday Night Football, the late news, then us, go ahead and DVR. We will do our very best to make it worthwhile for you.
So this was a big deal, by the way. Having a radio show where you can decide when your show ends is not unheard of, because you can just fill in with national programming sometime after a real late show, but it's unusual. On TV, it's unheard of.
It's the only one I've ever 27 years I've been doing this. This is the only show, and for the last couple of years, the way things worked out, that it has worked that way. So, and my apologies in advance to our studio crew, who I know at times is like, oh my God, would they shut up? but we're just not done. We're just not done. And we're going to go till we're done. And so that's, I hope that you will appreciate, we will do our best to make sure you do appreciate it.
That is the way this show works, as the listeners know. I appreciate you hanging on for as long as you did for the show and listening. Other folks out there, if you want to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Talk about whatever you want. But right now, I'm collecting people who have concerns for the 2024 Ravens. And we're going through some fun shows on that. We had the first of that type, had a great discussion on that question out online today. If you want to take a look at my Twitter feed to see how that went, but a lot of fun anyway. And just DM me, always open, and I will respond very quickly and schedule you for your show if you'd like to talk about that. Pete, thanks again for coming on.
My pleasure, Ken. Thank you for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.